Sometimes we forget to celebrate. Sometimes we forget that we are all descendants of the same star, and that we all share the same sorts of worries and anxieties and goals for our children and our grandchildren and our care for our neighbors. Holes in the fabric. Tears and unraveling. I felt that at Ishor from the first day I arrived. But my own focus, what I thought was supposed to happen here, I just sort of laid it aside and said, everything will calm down as we just move through all these great interim goals and the governance and the list. I've been known to do that. Focus on the list. What is rent for good? What can be mended? The anxiety, the sort of disagreements and resistance to change, all kept increasing, not diminishing. So obviously whatever I was offering was not doing the trick. So I called for help. I talked to several colleagues and I called our consultant, Christine Robinson, and described to her what I was experiencing. And that was back in last October. Around the end of December, she said, when I tried several different things, she said, I think it's time for us to come visit. And so we made a plan for them, to Christine and Jennifer, to talk with members of the church and the board and to read through all the documents and the history, Peter's departure, Joan's departure, Leon's notes, everything. So they did that. Then they started talking to you in January. And last week, they gave us their summary. How many of you went, oh, thank God, now we can relax? Dorothy, of course. That's how you respond to everything. It was another delivery of uncertainty. What you had expected was not going to unfold as you expected it. And that just creates, I think, a little more anxiety and needs attention. But what sort of attention? One of the things they mentioned was that Ishor stepped into a perfect storm. You'd already been through departure of two ministers. You stepped into the whole political tumult of the election and the campaign and all the anxiety that brought, and then the new administration and the anxiety. I mean, is this the first time in I don't know how many years we've actually been worried again about nuclear war? But we march on. We trundle through, not recognizing how that uncertainty affects our souls and our bodies. And we come here looking for a little certainty, a little comfort. Yet not so much. Perfect storm. I don't know how many of you have been through family therapy, but usually there's when something happens in the system and people start to get anxious, they start not looking at what the source of the anxiety is, whether it's a disease or financial or relational. They start quibbling with each other, trying to find something, someone to blame, to make it all right again. There were some recommendations that came last Sunday. Developmental ministry, build trust, keep up with the right relations work, work on your governance structures, pay more attention to communication, work with your mission. Think of it as a potluck. Don't have to do it all. Do parts of it. Practice love, etc. explore spirituality, build community, promote justice. Christine and Jennifer reminded you that they believe in your capacity to mend, to be strong. They've read through the stories and they realize that sense of mistrust or conflict has been here for a long time. They found pieces of it back as far as 25 years ago when you were doing Welcoming Congregation, when David Pilger killed himself. There were mistrust. There was factions. Some of you might remember some of that. Might find in yourselves that, yes, there is something familiar that I can feel or sense. They departed offering us their blessings. When I went on the website to look at the report, I couldn't find it because Nicole hasn't actually posted it yet. But you know what was there? Mark Ewart's from 2015. Create a new mission and vision statement, strategic plan. Check. Clarify your governance program. Improve the way you relate to each other. And your build a more friendly membership culture. Provide more support for your annual fund drive. There's some similarities there that remind us this didn't just start. That's the reason for a developmental ministry. Because we couldn't really, in 2 years, address this adequately. So you'll come to work with someone new. Board will let you know when. You have a task force now that is going to look at the goals, look at the options, report back to you, get your feedback. And together, you will move forward. But I like what Gunilla Norris says, that maybe sometimes we just have to sit with the afraid. Not rush into an answer, not rush into doing something, but sit with each other. Feel the discomfort. Allow it to move through us. I've not always been really good at that. As a matter of fact, from the time I was 2 years old, I think my first words, I can do it myself. And I had my hands on my hips, my mother tells me. And since then, I have sort of bulldozed myself from one objective to the next. You know, just like goals, keep on moving forward. Until January 4th, 2003. I went to my doctor for my routine physical, and I'd been without health insurance. The church couldn't quite afford it yet, so I was waiting through the fall to get that health insurance and go for my physical, and I was feeling pretty good. I had a little stitch in my side. And my doctor was also a friend, so she did her exam, and she's really quiet. I want you to go for an ultrasound now. I said, Penny, I've got the office, I've got... She said, now, this does not look good, she said soberly. That got my attention. From that day until the end of January, when I woke up from surgery to learn that they'd taken out a lot of things, 3 very large ovarian tumors and quite a bit else of my innards. I found myself in what some of you who have faced a terminal diagnosis might also have known, a sense of futurelessness, a sense of what happens now, an extreme directive that comes down from the universe that says, pay attention, moment to moment. There is a real possibility you will not live. So I did gather my spirit, move minute to minute, exam to exam, breath to breath, present with my family, my friends. I was not a bulldozer. I was not thinking about goals. I was sitting with being afraid. If anyone else has experienced this, you know there is an absolute miraculous gift that comes with being futureless. Maybe for the first time in my life, I was present, motivated to make and find peace with all that was unfinished in my heart, in my mind. Time to accept my life to that moment, just as it was, and to actually realize how much I loved it and loved everybody in it. In that peace, in that acceptance, I surrendered absolutely, totally to everyone around me and waited. Just waited. Over the years, that peace escapes me sometimes, that surrender. But it's always available to me. Because I learned that it does not take a terminal diagnosis. Every one of us in this moment can walk out that door and never come back. We all live every minute, breath to breath, moment to moment. The questions of our lives confront us. What to have for dinner? How do we protect our children? What happens when there's another tragedy? What about retirement? We plan, when actuality, we shouldn't, not necessarily. It's much more important to surrender, to be present, breath to breath, moment to moment, loving, loving your life. Because the next breath might take it away. Control? Really? We have not. It's an illusion. And faith comes with that discovery. Faith comes when you internalize the precious beauty, the precious truth, that all we have is right here, right now. And it's the preciousness of that awakening that Kanila Norris is reminding us about in Mending. Mary Pfeiffer bought a sheet at an auction once, and then she wrote this. Most of us are no longer menders. We are Kmart shoppers who discard objects at the very first sign of disrepair and get a new one. Mending takes time. Patience, skill, personal attention. It is cherishing. It is having an I-thou relationship with something. Object, you are mine, so I will fix you. Staying in relationships is to be a mender. Marriages that last do so because of a commitment to cherish, to mend. We mend what we value. We value what we mend. Mending hallows objects and gives people depth of character. What was it Descartes said? Cogito ergo sum, right? I think, therefore I am. He got it wrong, I think. I think it was William Sloan Coffin who pointed out amo ergo sum. I love, therefore I am. Unitarian Universalists like them both. We like our reason and our minds. We love our hearts. And it's only with them both that we actually do what we need to do authentically, effectively. Heart and hands, heart and mind, side by side, in conversation with each other. My heart says this, my mind tells me this, together. Together. Namaste. Namaste. Very same time, our minds and our hearts are working at things, our fears, our egos, our less than perfect selves can get in the way. They can keep us from reaching out when we really need to, for help, for support. They can keep us from reaching out when we really need to offer support, help. There's a play, Dancing on Lunasa, that I love. It's all about these Irish people going through the 30s and the chaos that a radio brings into their life. And one of the players says, "You work hard at your job, you try to keep the home together, you perform your duties as best you can because you believe in responsibility and obligation and good order and control. And then suddenly you realize there are hair-thin cracks appearing everywhere, that control is slipping away, that the whole thing is so fragile it can't be held together much longer. It's all about to collapse." Certainly the way I feel when I read the latest headline, it's all about to collapse. Will it be over a memo? Will it be over another tragic shooting? What will be the final straw? Pema Chodron says, "Compassionate action starts with seeing yourself. When you start to make yourself right or wrong, it's only at that point can you contemplate the fact that there is a larger alternative to right and wrong, to either of these. And it's a more tender, shaky kind of place where you could live. Shaky, scary kind of place. When you're thinking it's all about to collapse, it's not about being right or wrong. It's about being compassionate with yourself, with each other, being so vulnerable that you can actually sit in the discomfort of uncertainty. We have shared much since I arrived in April of 2016, seems sometimes like thousands of years ago, and sometimes it feels like yesterday, communally, nationally, globally. We've all felt right, maybe righteous. We've all felt wrong or wronged. And at the same time, we're going through all that here. The world has stolen precious lives from us. Fires have burned. Hurricanes have raged. There's tragedy and fear and loss. The fragility of the world around us, the uncertainty of the world's political future, is no small matter. We bring it all here for mending, for courage, for comfort, being together as we try to restore some faith in something, doing and being more than just individuals clinging to the grass, trying not to fall off of the world. Ishor did not arrive at this moment on its own in a vacuum. It's not about the stories of the last year, the last 2 years, or the last 3 years. You are carrying forward the stories of the past, the triumphs, the losses, the errors, the tragedies. I think there was 1 year where you had 4 different suicides, including your associate minister. You do not mend from that easily. And there's more to your story than I've been able to unravel with you, more than anyone's memory here might be able to piece together. And it's going to take you a longer ministry to integrate that whole story, to heal all the pieces that need to heal, to mend where the buttons no longer reach the holes. You need to mend. You need to rebuild trust. And that will take time. And I have no promises of how that will be, what it will look like. I have no assurance of what more any of us or all of us will be called to endure in the world, in the nation. These last few years of my life on this earth have taught me that tragedy is recurring. And there is no tragedy or loss beyond our imaginations. I have also learned the truth of human power to reach out, to care, to rebuild, heal, give generously of all that is asked, whether it's for floods, fires, wars. Human beings with hearts to love and hands to serve show up. So today, I want you to gather your spirits, sit together. Be gentle. Sit by someone's side and listen. Rock in chairs. Care for children. Their smiles will mend you. You will mend. You are mending. And all the work of your future begins here, now, in this breath, in this moment. Restoring faith, mending souls, so that you can be present for each other, moment to moment, for whatever you are called to be present for. I have seen you do that. I know you have the skills you need. I have been witness to your ability to do whatever task is asked of you. And you have one another. The heart of this congregation is the truth that no one here must face any adversity or uncertainty alone. There is strength in the warmth of your neighbor's hand. There is truth in your loving care for one another. That is the truth you must hold on to. And that is all the beauty you need. May you be blessed.